Okay, I'm presenting on the Pagan Health Survey, and to the best of my knowledge, this is the first really large nationwide survey of the pagan community and how they perceive health and healing, the biomedical community, and also their healthcare choices. I have no relationships to disclose. In a little bit, I'll get to what pagans believe, because for a lot of people, it's probably not what you think. There's a lot of folks that think that paganism has something to do with Satanism. Christine O'Donnell didn't really help us out recently with that. but the reality is that, you know, for folks that have never heard about paganism before, the easiest way for me as an anthropologist and as someone who's studied comparative religion for many years to explain it is take a little bit of Hinduism, a little bit of Buddhism, and a little bit of Native American spirituality, mush it up, combine it with European mythology, and you're getting close. So I'll talk about specific beliefs in a bit, but what I mean by paganism is a group, it's an umbrella term, very much like saying Eastern religions. And it's an umbrella term for a bunch of different nature-centered and European-influenced religions. Most of these are rather new. They've been recreated or reconstructed in the last 300 years or so. It is one of the fastest-growing movements in the United States. In 2001, the American Religious Identification Survey found that there were about 330,000 pagans in the United States. The most recent surveys from the American Religious Identification Survey and from the Pew Forum show that there's somewhere between about 1 million to 2 million folks now identifying as pagan. So it's growing tremendously rapidly, but it's still very much a minority group of religions, and it's very, very internally diverse. So how much these folks come together in order to give a voice has been rather difficult. The Pagan Health Survey was a grassroots effort to give pagans a voice and help the public health community understand them a little bit better. I kind of came up with this idea after being in the community for a while and having studied anthropology of religion for quite a lot of years, and then realizing that there was interest on the behalf of the public health community to better understand pagans and particularly Wiccans. And then I kind of took this to a variety of clergy that I had worked with on other issues and interfaith movements and things like that and said, what do you guys think? And they said, this is great, let's try and get something done. So this was really a grassroots effort, it was a collaborative effort arising out of the pagan community, and it was funded by pagans, individual donations of their time and resources, and it very much built on a participatory model. It included participant observation. A lot of folks wonder, how do you do research on your own community? And that's been a question for me too, because I've done research in communities that aren't mine for most of the 10 years I've been doing research. But I say it's easier to turn off being in a community for me than it is to turn off being an anthropologist. I have my longest time of training as an anthropologist, so I tend to see everything through that lens. We had depth interviews. I had 2 to 4 hour interviews with 9 pagan clergy and healthcare practitioners, and these provided a depth of understanding into their views of theology and how it overlapped with healing practices that I couldn't get from a more survey-based approach. And then I had a survey. It was online, 41 questions. It took about a half hour to 45 minutes to complete. I had close to 1,600 respondents over the course of 2 months. How I was able to get that was that I knew a certain clergy who worked on a national basis and were published authors. And so having worked with them on other issues, particularly in interfaith matters, I was able to kind of contact them and say, can you help me distribute this? So it was very effective at getting the word out. It also helped that I was actually in the community. It would have been much more difficult, I think, to get the responses I had if I was coming in completely from the outside. The completion rate was also pretty high for it being as long a survey as it was. It was 72.8%. In addition to the survey, over 400 people opted to write in a bunch of extra information, which I am still analyzing, because the data was a little bit overwhelming. I didn't expect a quarter of the respondents to send me everything from case studies to concerns to clarification on how exactly they made healthcare choices. So I am still in the midst of a great deal of qualitative data analysis. Geographically, I was a little surprised and very happy to see that I managed to get respondents from all over the country. I would have actually expected to see greater respondents out of the coastal states, which are typically perceived to be more liberal, diverse, and accepting of diversity. But in fact, it was pretty much spread out based on national population. And the only exception is that you'll see that California has an enormous pagan population compared to the rest of the individual states. However, it also has a big population overall, so it's not as skewed as one might think. But yeah, we have almost 20% of the population in the South. And in terms of rural, urban, and suburban distribution, we had an equal distribution across those three types of areas. So that was, to me, both surprising and very welcome to be able to catch the rural population. In terms of demographic information, 75% of the respondents were women. There has been another pagan census that dealt more with political views. This was done by a number of sociologists in 2003 and is published as a book, Voices from the Pagan Census, which indicates that perhaps this is a little bit skewed, more women than it should be. I think they had found about 65% of the population were women, but there are substantially more women than men in the pagan community. 95% identified as white, non-Hispanic, and 10% identified as Native American. In terms of age distribution, the largest number of folks came from the 36 to 50 bracket. And so there's a perception, I think, sometimes that I've run across in the media that this is something that teenage kids do, and maybe it is, I don't know. But it's also something that older adults are doing. So what I found was, on average, respondents had been a pagan for 17 years. So this wasn't like a phase in their life that they were like in high school and, you know, saw Charmed or Harry Potter or something and thought, oh, you know, I'll take this on as a religion. This was, like many people in other religious communities, a lifelong choice and a commitment to a particular faith group. I found that over 40% had some college, about 30% had a bachelor's degree or higher. 16% were employed in the healthcare professions. They were most commonly employed in regular Western biomedical jobs, the highest concentration in nursing, with another peak in mental health professions and in emergency responders. Something that's interesting that might be a little bit different from many other religious groups is that over 30% are in training as clergy or are clergy themselves. And at first, you might go, what? You know, how does that work out? But what happens is that the average pagan local group is very small. It operates more like a Bible study, if you're familiar with the Christian religions, than it does as a church. So they typically meet in people's homes. Some of them meet at Unitarian Universalist churches. And they typically are quite small, and so you need a higher percentage of clergy. And there's also a tendency to be more desiring of self-sufficiency in one's spiritual life in the pagan community. So many people, even if they don't directly serve a religious community, go through additional training that allows them to have the level of knowledge that is closer to a clergy person than a lay person. What I found was that the local groups were an average of 24 members, most of whom had a clergy person serving as a part-time person that wasn't paid. Those who serve the spiritual community full-time, often in regional or national capacities as teachers or artists, are often underpaid, unfortunately, because the size of the community isn't often sufficient to give them a full income the way that, for example, a Christian pastor would have. What I found was that about 42% of the folks had an income under $35,000. And the highest income group was actually folks that were middle class or higher, but there was this significant split. So you actually see that that there's a concentration in the polls, almost, between people who are making a good bit of money and people who are struggling economically. And I'm not sure if this is the reason, because I did not get into occupational class with this, which has been done in the census in 2003. But something that caused me to pause with that is that it seems that the most common occupational categories are both artists, various kinds of artists and musicians, and on the other hand, professionals. You know, a lot of people in the computer industry, programmers, engineers, healthcare professionals, teachers, and so on. So you get this kind of split in terms of what people's economic status is. The most probably relevant and interesting information for healthcare professionals about the demographics is, first of all, that we have a substantial issue to deal with in the community in terms of elders that don't necessarily have the kind of support they'd have from a church because we're just not big enough. So we have a number of people, about 20% of our population, nearing retirement age, and yet the kind of support that people may be able to get through a Christian community, for example, that has a church and may be able to provide social services, is really difficult for a community where there may only be, you know, a few dozen people in a group. How do you help provide for those that are approaching retirement age and then eventually will face, you know, issues of aging? The other interesting thing is that there's a huge percentage, higher than I thought there'd be, honestly, of folks that are in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and questioning community in the pagan community. We found that 39% were non-heterosexual in their identity, 28.9% identified as bisexual, and 8.4% identified as homosexual. Additionally, 17% identified their gender as non-dual. So while most people could check woman on the survey, they had the option to also check other categories. And what they often did was check different ways of describing themselves. Most particularly, they checked gender fluid or androgynous. This indicated, along with a lot of the qualitative responses, that pagan folks are just as likely to be concerned with a healthcare professional understanding them as being a non-heterosexual person as they are with being understood for their religious diversity. And in fact, in many responses, their thing was, if I have to pick and choose between somebody who respects my sexual orientation and somebody who understands and respects my religion, I'm going to pick sexual orientation. I don't really necessarily need someone who understands my religion, but I do need someone who understands my sexuality. Okay, brief crash course in beliefs. The thing about pagan traditions is you don't have to pick and choose in the community. People are very not only welcoming of diversity, but kind of celebrate it and like a diversity of opinion, which is really hard for some folks to wrap their heads around if they come from a community that's more about unified belief. In the pagan community, it's not about belief so much as what you do and how you support the people around you. Because of this, people can self-identify with multiple religious affiliations at the same time. So what we found, in fact, was that with the self-identified affiliations within the pagan traditions, we had people identifying as multiple things. And how it works is there's sort of paganism, the umbrella term, and then there's sort of broad traditional terms like Wiccan, witchcraft, druid, reconstructionist, and so on. And then there's traditions underneath those broad terms, and then there's lineages underneath that. And what the lineage is that the typical group doesn't work so much like a church as it does a school. And I mean that like college. You study under someone who studied under someone who studied under someone, and you can trace this lineage back to some sort of original thinker who brought some material together. So it's not uncommon when you really talk to people for them to say, oh, well, I've studied this and I've studied that and I'm mixing it together. Additionally, the pagan community doesn't require that you convert. So 45% also identified as a non-pagan religion, most commonly Unitarian Universalist, Christian, and Buddhist. And there are people, for example, that would practice Buddhism for 10 years and then start practicing paganism also, but never really leave Buddhism behind. And we have similar things that go on with Christianity, where they don't see it as an either-or distinction. In terms of beliefs, pagans are most often pantheists, thinking that nature, all of nature is divine, nature is sacred. Polytheist, meaning that they believe that there could be many gods, and there might be more like a pantheon rather than one individual god. Or animist, which is the idea that spirit is in everything, that everything is alive and has a sense of consciousness. The self is typically viewed in a very holistic, integrated way. So they're concerned about multiple levels of the self, and they typically don't see death as necessarily a bad thing. It's not like what you want to have happen to you, of course. But it's seen as sort of a matter-of-fact part of life. Most people believe in reincarnation, and so they kind of think, well, it's kind of something that you have to go through to move on and have the next life. Core values include balance for the self, include balance, moderation, and self-empowerment. And many training programs and many traditions include spiritual and herbal healing practices. So this will get, you'll see, into worldview and choice quite a bit. They're non-mainstream beliefs for the most part, but they uphold the scientific approach. Their mode of inquiry is closer to a scientific approach than it is to other modes of inquiry. Because they lack a central authority, most pagans use observation, research, experimentation, and creativity to build spiritual practice. And so most of them said they thought the biomedical and scientific approaches were great. They weren't the only approaches to take, but they were aligned with their own beliefs. However, there were significant conflicts in how they thought about healing and health versus how they perceived the biomedical system and how it's delivered. And so you have to split what they think about the approach versus what they think about the delivery system. I did a bunch of work on cultural model theory, and these are basically representations of cultural models or specific domains of knowledge, trends that are held in specific domains of knowledge. So what you found here that was really interesting to me is that when people responded to the terms doctor and medicine, they overwhelmingly saw this as healing and helping. That this was its purpose. However, when you asked them to respond to healing, they hardly ever said doctor or medicine. So there's this disconnect. I think part of the disconnect comes in that they perceived doctor and medicine to be very heavily associated with pharmaceuticals. And drugs were normally considered a last resort. They would prefer more natural treatments that don't have side effects. So this kind of blocked that healing issue. Wow, this went much faster than I thought, so I'm going to hurry up. So what you find with healing is that people primarily associated it with spiritual issues, not with pharmaceuticals, and this caused that blockage. They also perceived health as a much broader thing to achieve in your life than just the absence of disease, which also caused a glitch there. They would prefer holistic models. Most of them are just like ordinary Americans in terms of their insurance and in terms of their seeking treatment, except that they would be more likely to add self-treatment and the use of complementary and alternative medicine in addition to biomedicine. So this is something for healthcare professionals to be aware of, that they're very likely to be using herbal techniques and so on that you'd want to know about if you're prescribing pharmaceuticals. the biggest glitch was with how they perceived mental health. Physical health, they thought, was, you know, not perfect, but workable. But only about 36% of them thought they could trust a mental health professional, and only 28% thought it'd be effective. There were a lot of concerns about being treated for their religion rather than for mental illness. And for this reason, there's a big spike in when they would call a spiritual leader for help, and that was for mental illness, because it was perceived that this person could understand them better. However, their choices, and the column one is an accident, so you can ignore that. Their choices in why they would choose certain healthcare practitioners or treatments were completely pragmatic. They said, I don't care what religion this person is, as long as they respect me and are effective at healing me. And so they were primarily concerned with the same issues as other Americans, things like cost, availability, is it covered by my insurance, am I comfortable with it, this sort of thing. This is a mental health comparison, but I already summarized that. I wanted to kind of close, aside from all of these acknowledgments of people that participated in this and gave a substantial amount of their time, I wanted to close with saying that what came out of it was their primary concern was actually not to do with how they were perceived with their religion. They would like broader understanding in the public, but their primary concern was about public health. For most pagans, healing is considered to be a universal right. To have a healthy life and to be well is considered to be something that's an inherent spiritual right of people. And it's not just a mental, you know, it's not just a mental thing or a physical thing. And they look across and see the inequity, and their biggest concern that came out of the survey was that they thought the problem with the biomedical system primarily had to do with people actually getting care. Their concern was with a quarter of the nation being uninsured, with people who were insured being unable to afford their deductibles, their premiums, and so on. And so when they looked across the U.S., the primary things that they wanted to say were, we would like the healthcare delivery system to work better. We would like to see people have universal healthcare. And they see this as really a spiritual value as well as a practical one. And so I think in that way, they share this with many other faith communities, that they're concerned about the inequity. Thank you very much.